Welcome to Antimatter Pod, a Star Trek podcast where we discuss fashion, feminism, subtext, and subspace, hosted by Annika and Liz. Today, we are discussing the Star Trek The Next Generation episodes, The First Duty, and Lower Decks.
What a pair! First, can I apologize to listeners if I'm producing even more background noise than usual? We're coming up on 3 days of 40 degrees Celsius, which I think is about 104 in freedom degrees, and I have my fan running.
That's wild.
I'm not a fan.
Beautiful right now, which means also too warm for the season,
yeah.
Because it shouldn't be as nice as it is right now, but it's very nice here.
No. We had a very cool summer, and I thought we had escaped the worst, but the worst was there, waiting for me. Just like fate waits for Cito Jaxa. See how I brought us back on topic?
Oh, no. Okay, so are we going to go in order, or are we just going to jump off?
I think we should go in order because I was really struck by what a great pair this episode makes. I even looked up to see if they had the same writer. No, the first duty was Ronald D. Moore and Naren Shankar, who of course have gone on to other speculative franchises, and Lower Decks was Rene Echevarria, who I think is also still working, because all the men who worked on DS9 and The Next Generation went on to have long careers, and none of the women did.
Not that you're bitter.
I just think it's an interesting pattern and worth discussing. These are both great episodes. They're really thematically tight in a way that I don't think is wholly intentional. There is a moment in The First Duty which you would think was intentionally referenced in Lower Decks, and I don't think that was the case. It's just an amazing pair, and I'm really glad that Lower Decks inspired us to look at both of them together.
Yes.
And also, it's weird that we've never done that.
I have done that.
Oh, it's weird that I've never done that.
I mean, I've always thought of them as going together in terms of, because Picard's, here I go skipping around, but Picard's actions in Lower Decks are directly tied to the First Duty.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and this is the Cito Jaxa duology, but I had never watched them back to back and appreciated how tightly linked they really are.
I guess that makes sense.
Because you could watch Lower Decks without seeing The First Duty.
Yes, because it's TNG and that's how it's written.
Yeah.
But I do think that even though they're not the same writers, obviously Echevarria watched The First Duty. Yeah. And I agree with you that it's not intentional. I do that all the time in my writing, where I write something and then I get to the end of it and I go, oh, I was writing about that all along. Look at how clever I am without even knowing.
And these guys were absolutely all in the room together, probably for both episodes. So I don't think it happened in a vacuum, but it's just delightful to see this famously episodic series planting these seeds and then reaping the rewards.
It's well done.
I only have one beef with these two episodes. They're both really bad for Beverly.
That is very true. They're very bad for Beverly. And I mean, it's worse in The First Duty because just nope. And I mean, I love these episodes.
Oh yeah.
As Star Trek, and I love them as stories. But in terms of caring about the family dynamics, not great. And sexist, also.
Yes, I think you did a photo cap of The First Duty where you said something like, imagine if Beverly got to be the parent in this episode. Instead of Jean-Luc Bad Dad Picard.
Literally, he's the main parent.
Yeah.
In the entire episode, she does nothing. She has like one hugging scene.
You know, she's concerned, and she's like, oh no, my boy couldn't have done anything wrong. It must have been a mistake.
In her scene where she's like, you know, I'll love you, whatever, but they don't actually have a conversation. It's like a half a line that I have to fill in the rest to say that she's saying, whatever you've done, I'm still going to be your mom. And I would have rather had the actual scene.
Because she's not even really saying that. She's saying, I don't believe you've done anything wrong. It's maybe not the best parenting. And it makes me really wish that we got a scene anywhere in the series, you know, at the end of this episode, in Journey's End, where Beverly and Wesley get to have a conversation about the fact that, in a sense, Joshua Albert died the way Jack Crusher died.
Yes.
Doing his duty and serving a charismatic leader.
And I think both are considered accidental. And yes, just more conversations between Beverly and Wesley about literally anything is always what I'm going to say about it. But the fact that every scene that is about Wesley's decisions is with Picard.
Yes.
Makes me angry.
And I don't begrudge Picard these scenes. This is an amazing Picard episode. You know,
absolutely.
There's this cute and seemingly pointless scene in the teaser where he talks about being called to the commandant's office and Riker and Troy are like, ooh, what did you do? And then we never learn the details, but it's hinted through his conversations with Boothby that Picard really, really messed up and had to face consequences. And I'm actually amazed that Star Trek Picard didn't give us a whole episode about that incident and the trauma and how it was never Jean-Luc's fault all along. Not that I have any lingering feelings about that series.
I think you have a lot of lingering feelings about that series, but you're not the one who put Annika wants to talk about Jack Crusher in the outline, so obviously I do as well.
Well, I also wanted to talk about Jack Crusher because the scenes with Wesley in Picard's ready room, the resemblance between Will Wheaton and Ed Spaliers was astonishing.
Absolutely. I made that video, and I know.
Yeah.
It is incredible. So are we talking about Jack Crusher now, or do we want to go again?
Let's get it out of the way.
Badly. Okay. Isn't it interesting that Wesley is introduced as going to be the next captain of the Enterprise?
Basically.
Even though he's 15. But he's special. He's going to be great. He's going to join Starfleet. And, you know, he has this legacy of his father and his mother and Picard. He is main legacy person of the next generation, and is also literally the next generation. And he bounces on Starfleet and says, I don't want that. Actually, I want to go explore space with the hippies and the indigenous peoples and change the world on granular and gigantic levels at the same time. And then we have Jack, who is the opposite. He is raised saving the world on granular and galactic levels with his mom out in the frontiers with the hippies and the criminals. And then he shows up and they're like, okay, we will put you in Starfleet. Because sounds good.
Yeah.
And ends up on the Enterprise and in the command line. Good job, Jack Crusher. And I think that is accidentally brilliant. Fully not at all thought about it, even by one person. However, I love cycles. I love circles. I love mirrors. And that is all of them. And it's awesome.
The universe requires one of Beverly Crusher's sons to be in Starfleet.
It's fun for me. It makes me happy. And it makes me like Wesley leaving more.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of issues with Wesley leaving in that we don't get a good reason. We just get, let's go back to that really weird, terrible episode from season one. and make it more terrible.
Let's also make it kind of racist.
Kind of racist, kind of ableist, kind of like just bad, just bad. Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like that episode at all. And I don't like that it's Wesley's goodbye.
No, because he leaves on such a petulant and self-absorbed note where,
right,
you know, he is absolutely at a stage in his life and career where burnout is frankly to be expected. He's been working since he was 15 years old. But sometimes being around a depressed and burnt out person is a real downer. And so as an audience member, it's not fun to watch. But at the same time, I think Lower Decks, to skip ahead, gives us a reason why Wesley leaves Starfleet.
Right. So I feel like New Trek is trying to fix this for me, and I appreciate that. As someone who cares deeply about Wesley Crusher,
yes,
and the Crusher family, I am very pleased that they are correcting some of these mistakes for me.
Absolutely. And I just think The First Duty is such a rewatchable episode, and it never disappoints me. And I was a little unsure going in, because Lower Decks does kind of make Locarno a cartoon, but it is literally a cartoon. I don't know if you've noticed Lower Decks. But Nick Locarno is a person who knows he's peaking at the Academy, and he gets his friend killed trying to make sure he goes out on a high note, basically, and then manipulates the rest of his team into lying about it, right down to his final act of resigning or allowing himself to be expelled and taking the sole responsibility, is kind of one last guilt trip directed at Wesley.
Yeah, absolutely. He's taking full responsibility for all of that, which means he's also taking, like, full... I can now be angry about this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because I have a chip on my shoulder about how unfair it all was, even though I did it to myself.
Yeah. I am such a victim.
Like, I am such a victim for striving for glory the way I'm supposed to in Starfleet.
Mm.
Like, it's fully just, yes, the guy who peaks in high school and doesn't know what to do after that. And he just doesn't come off as a nice person at all.
No. He has the sort of charm and good manners and sense of what's appropriate that makes a good first impression on people like Picard and Beverly, but it very quickly becomes apparent that there is no substance. To borrow the word used in Lower Decks, there is no character behind that facade. I think fans for a long time wanted Wesley to be more of a Locarno type. They wanted him to be smoother and better in social situations and less of a nerd in whom they could see themselves. And Nicholas Locarno, he's also the dark side of Jack Crusher. He's the chosen one who blows it all up out of entitlement. Whereas Jack... And I mean second generation Jack, Star Trek Picard Jack.
My Jack.
Your Jack. Puts on a facade of entitlement, but actually feels entitled to nothing.
And it's interesting to look at the three characters together.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. I think that's actually very smart to say that Nick is who people want to be like. But they are more like Wesley. And then Jack is like that in between where I could go either way.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy with either. You know, I don't feel comfortable.
But also, and I'm a little embarrassed that I thought of Jack before I thought of this character, Tom Paris.
Well, Tom Paris has obviously Tom Paris has a lot in common with Nick Locarno, but I like to think about the differences more.
Oh, yeah.
I think that Tom is more like Jack Crusher in that he's playing the part of that guy, whereas Nick just thinks he is that guy.
Yeah. Tom also has grown up in privilege but doesn't actually feel entitled to anything. He just acts like it.
Right.
And...
Well, it's hard. The privilege and legacy is a two-edged sword because you are given... a lot,
Yeah.
and then you feel like you didn't earn any of it.
Yeah. And I also feel like, and I know we discussed this back when Lower Decks had its finale, but I really do think that Tom Paris's crime is far, far lesser than Nick Locarno's. They both killed officers and they both lied about it, but Nick drew three other officers into his lie.
Yes, and Nick, like, he manipulates their emotions in all of the scenes. He's like, well, we could tell the truth, but why would we want to do that? Because then that, like, ruins the. He's just very smarmy, but he's being charming about it.
Also, Tom reveals the truth off his own bat. Nicholas is forced to.
Oh, Nick Locarno 100% would have kept that secret forever.
Oh, yeah. And the thought that struck me as I watched him talk to the rest of Nova Squadron was if he stayed in Starfleet, he would get so many more officers killed.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. Because
Because
he has
you
the
want there to be the
charisma.
safety net, right? You want there to be the process for which people like that don't get put in command. But Starfleet is a huge organization, and there are going to be people like this who are going to slip through the cracks. And it's thanks to Wesley and Picard that Nick Picardo didn't go on a killing spree. A quote unquote accidental killing spree.
I don't
Not that he's a
even.
sociopath, I'm not saying that.
I don't even think it's anything as blatant as a killing spree, but can you imagine him as a commander in the Dominion War? Like, he would have so many young officers sacrificing themselves unnecessarily and willingly for him. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense that he goes on to become a cult leader in Lower Decks. And speaking of Lower Decks, all I want is a remaster of The First Duty with Tawny Newsome in the background of the Academy scenes. Also,
Yes.
Garrett Wong. And also, there are a whole bunch of random shots which are really fuzzy, like they weren't remastered, and I think that could be fixed. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah. They could be at the trial, they could be on the grounds. I mean, more precious.
If Wesley is repeating his second year, that puts him in the same class as definitely Mariner and possibly Harry, but it might be that Harry has already done his second year and will go on ahead without Wesley.
I love finding out that all of these people went to the academy together. That's my favorite thing. I know everybody's like, oh, but that's too small. No, it's brilliant and wonderful, and they should know each other.
Which brings us to your question, who's sleeping with who in Nova Squadron?
I mean, obviously they're all sleeping with each other at all times, but okay, so I don't think that Wesley and Josh Albert had a relationship. But I think they could have. They could have been going that way.
You get the sense that there was mutual interest and they were building a friendship, which I love. That
Right.
is so mature of them.
It's very sweet, but like he had his sweater, okay? That was a choice.
Because you could just replicate a new sweater.
He could just replicate a new sweater, and also sweaters are that's the thing. It wasn't like I have a book of yours or something. A sweater is intimate.
And I definitely think that Jean Hajar and Nick were a thing. And I feel very bad about Jean because from the very first time I watched Lower Decks as a kid to now, I look at her and go, she's a mean girl.
Well, that's the thing. So if Nova Squadron are the top guns, I guess, of Starfleet Academy, then yeah, like they're the popular kids, right? That's what Mariner is saying. She's glomping onto them because they're the popular kids. And Nick came to the Academy to be the popular kids, so that makes sense. And so it like Jean as a mean girl seems fair. And then Wesley and Cito and Josh are like the actually talented pilots.
I'm not saying that Jean...
not that they're not talented. I'm just saying, like, they're the people who were there because they're the best, and they're the people who are there because they're the overachievers.
Yes, I think that Cito and Josh and Wesley were definitely not there because they were charismatic in the way that Josh and Jean are. They give, like, homecoming king and queen vibes.
Nick and Jean.
Yeah. I don't know what a homecoming king or queen is, but, you know, that's the vibe I get. I understand there's some sort of democratically elected high school monarch.
Yes.
And it's something to do with football.
Because, see, you do understand. There's also a parade.
Great.
There's a court.
Oh.
So Wesley and Cito and Josh could be in the court. All that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. Cito is pretty enough to be in the court. But I don't know about Josh and Wesley. But it's okay. They can still be on the float.
Yeah. I actually wonder if also I think Jean is a mean girl because her and Cito give Betty and Veronica vibes. And yes, so Cito is the sweet blonde girl next door, which makes Jean the slightly mean rich girl with a heart of gold buried deep down.
I don't believe you just made this about Riverdale. I am very excited.
I was actually thinking of like, I was going from Homecoming to like 1950s Archie comics and wondering if I could draw Nova Squadron in that style with Josh wearing a little like Jughead.
Please do this.
I will try.
I love it so much.
But the other thing about Jean is that she is the first to go along with Nick when Cito and Wesley are hesitating. And that's sort of what draws them along. And the simple thing is, we know the least of her, about her, of anyone. I have a better sense of who Josh Albert was than Jean Hajar.
Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know what happens to her after the Academy. My theory is actually that she dropped out. Unlike Cito, she couldn't handle it. And like Wesley, she left.
Well, since you just made up this nice backstory about her being a rich girl, she doesn't need the Academy. She just went home to rule her planet or whatever. She's cool. She's happy.
I feel like in the Federation, because it's not a monetary economy, that sort of privilege and clout comes from family connections. And, you know, anyone can get into university, but her family can find a place for her in the diplomatic corps or something.
Exactly. Exactly.
And someone who can lie to a board of inquiry is probably going to do okay as a diplomat or a diplomatic aide or, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, she wouldn't go right to diplomat, but
no,
she'd be on track.
Yeah. Yeah.
She can work for Loxana Troi.
Oh my God. Loxana would be like, oh, darling, your hair. We need to do something about your hair. Never lie to me. I will know. Oh, but your hair. We've covered most of what we had to say, I think, about this episode.
First duty.
But the thing that I find hardest to watch and yet love the most in this episode is at the end where Wesley says, I feel terrible, and Picard says, you should feel terrible. Because you want Picard to say something reassuring and comforting and like, don't worry, it'll get better. But Wesley, in a way, knows that, and he has Beverly to say that. And it's weirdly freeing to have someone go, yeah, you fucked up and you should feel bad about it. But at the same time, this is not the end of their relationship. This is not the beginning of an estrangement. The very first fic I ever started writing was a Picard-Beverly fic where Picard is just feeling so bad about how mean he was to Wesley. And like, you can tell that I was 11 when I wrote that. Because now I'm like, yeah, Picard was harsh, but was he wrong? Was he too harsh? I don't think so.
I don't think he was too harsh. I think he was the correct amount of harsh. Because you're right that he says it, but he doesn't say, and so I'm never speaking to you again. Their relationship hasn't changed. Their relationship was actually saved by Wesley confessing.
Yes, yes. We talk about how Star Trek is a universe where it's safe to fail, and it's safe to call someone you love out, and that is not the end of your relationship.
Imagine if there was more of that in the world.
No.
I feel like we have moved far, far away from it. you're no longer allowed to fail, and if you do something wrong, you're cut out of my life immediately. It's not how it actually works in the real world, and it's not how it actually works on television, but it's the discussion, the discourse, as they say, is fully that.
Yes.
You get no chances, and you are cut, like, you're canceling.
It's also like, and I can't remember which episode of Next Generation it is, but Data is in command and Worf is disagreeing with his decisions. And they have hard conversations, and then at the end Worf is like, I hope this won't affect our friendship. And people say this is unrealistic and too idealistic of the next generation. And I can see that, but I also think that this crew were handpicked for their ability to have those conversations. You know, Picard chose Riker because he knew Riker would call him out. This is a call-out safe space.
Yes. And, like, that's their entire relationship in the beginning, in a nutshell. He basically says that in the pilot. And they do it all the time. Like, Beverly also is willing to call people out. Yeah. Deanna's willing to call people out. Like, and the thing is that people love this show.
Yes.
This is, like, everyone's favorite feel-good show. And the fact that it is a place where you can do nothing wrong and still lose, and do everything wrong and still win, and have conversations about those two things, that's what's so comforting about it.
Yes. This is a show where everyone does their best to be a mature adult. And Picard extends that courtesy to Wesley, and almost always has. As he says, when Wesley first came onto his bridge, he was like, who is this child? And then learned to respect him. And then taking it to Lower Decks, Picard can be harsh with Wesley because he has known Wesley for so many years, and he understands Wesley, and they have a relationship with a strong foundation that can withstand that kind of hostility. I don't know that Picard has enough of a relationship with Sito to give her the same treatment.
Well, I'm going to go out on a little limb.
Yes.
And I'm going to say that he doesn't give her the same treatment.
Oh.
That he's actually harsher towards Sito in a way, because he's treating her as his underling and he is acting as the commanding officer of the Enterprise. Mm. In their interactions, he is definitely putting on the persona of, I am Captain Picard, I am disappointed dad Captain Picard, but I am still Captain Picard, as opposed to, I'm disappointed dad first.
That actually makes a lot of sense. As he is in
Wesley. And so I think that because there is this sort of professional sheen, if we didn't get, like, he owes her an apology.
Yes.
By the end, if we didn't get, like, the scene where basically, she's just tested throughout this episode. It's like, it's one big, long, giant test for Sito, just with every interaction. And if we didn't get everybody owning up to that, then I would demand an apology. But we do get that. And so it's like, okay, it was part of this. And she accepts it.
Yes.
So I will let her be the adult and decide that that's enough for her.
No, that's fair. And I think it's hard to see Picard dressing down Sito, whom we know we're sympathetic to. And we know that this is not how Picard typically acts with his crew. But Picard doesn't really interact with his junior officers. That's usually something he delegates to Riker. And Riker, right, as we see from his interactions with Lavelle, is kind of a hard ass.
Yes. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't get an easy ride if you're serving on the Enterprise.
Well, and you shouldn't.
No!
Again, this is the flagship of the fleet. It is, the place where you're supposed to be one of the best. You have to live up to that.
If you want to serve on a ship of happy underachievers, you go to the Cerritos or any California class. If you want a ship of weirdos and outcasts, you go to Voyager or Discovery. If you want to serve with the best of the best of the best, you go to the Enterprise and you have to act to that standard.
That said, why are all the mentors so bad?
I really want to shout out Worf, who is a fantastic mentor for Seto. He respects her. He tells her verbally that he thinks that she's capable of more, and then he demonstrates it through the fake Mokbara trial. He has her back at every point.
And even when she's not there.
Yes.
He talks her up in the poker game.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone else can get in the bin.
Exactly. It's like, and like, can we just say, do you know how bad you have to make everyone else for Worf to be the best? Like, Worf is perfect in this episode.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Beginning to end, Worf is perfect, which is great for Worf, because Worf doesn't get to be perfect very often.
No.
So it's wonderful for Worf. But, I mean, Geordi, no. Beverly, no.
No.
Deanna, acceptable.
But Riker is only acceptable-ish because Deanna is pushing him.
He's there. Yeah. Right. He's only acceptable-ish because Deanna's like, stop it.
Deanna is holding the brain cell.
I mean, okay. So do you want to have like a fight over if Geordi or Beverly is more inappropriate?
I think they're both inappropriate, but in different ways. Beverly is not interested in, like, Alyssa's career development. She's like, oh, yeah, you'll get a promotion. Let's talk about boys.
And she is way, like, okay, if you are someone who is literally doing a job evaluation.
Yeah.
Don't talk about your personal life at the same time. Don't gossip about your personal life to your friends who are also doing job evaluations of the same people.
Yeah. No, this is not a great Beverly episode. And also, I feel like, I know she's the chief medical officer, but I feel like there should be a separate head of nursing who is evaluating Alyssa. But also,
it is just,
Alyssa is the nurse we see the most of, and it's possible she is the head nurse.
She probably is the head nurse.
She's an ensign.
She's going to get a promotion. She's going to be a lieutenant.
Yeah. Yeah. I do get the feeling that she is older than the others, and I wouldn't be shocked if, like, the medical branch handled promotions differently. Just professional development-wise, I don't rate Crusher as a great boss.
No.
Geordi is a bad boss in a different way, and this is the same problem.
I mean, we already knew
that
Geordi was a bad boss because of all of his interactions with Barclay.
Right.
Or, like, anyone.
No. I hate Barclay, and I'm not a big fan of Torek, though he is better than Vorik, his twin brother. But Geordi makes it far too clear when he is annoyed by or not interested in hearing from a colleague.
And can we just say,
that's not cool.
The only people that we've seen Geordi interact with under him, he's either annoyed with them, like Barclay and Torek, or he's trying to date them.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
That's Geordi's two modes. I don't think that's good.
I want to float the idea that Geordi is the perfect engineer because he was clearly promoted for his engineering skills and not his managerial, soft, interpersonal skills.
Definitely. He, like, no.
I'm actually now looking at the whole of Star Trek, and I think Billups might be the only engineer who is also a good manager.
I mean, yeah.
Mm.
Let's see. Shaw? Nope.
Nope.
B'Elanna?
Nope. Mm-hmm. I mean, love her, but no.
But no.
O'Brien?
Sometimes. The way that O'Brien is a bad manager is that he does everything himself. And he doesn't trust anybody else to do anything.
Yes, yes.
And then he complains about it.
Yeah.
I've worked with those people.
We are familiar with that type. Scotty, no, terrible.
Trip.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Wow, you're right. We just haven't seen how bad Billups is. Maybe it's just engineers can't do this.
I just think we need to rise above the stereotype, and Billups is very touchy-feely. He really, he gives a lot of positive feedback to his engineers. He is very free with the promotions.
You can just ask for things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go, Billups! You get the crown.
We still don't know who the chief engineer on Discovery is, but if it's Jet Reno, I'm going to say she is subpar.
I mean, still better than Geordi. I'm so sorry. I feel badly about how harsh I am on Geordi most of the time. So let's just say, he's wonderful in Picard.
I just think that Star Trek as a franchise owes reparations to LeVar Burton, who is one of the most...
A wonderful person.
Yeah. A decent person, a talented actor, just oozing charisma, and by all accounts, a really pleasant and wonderful person to work with. Why did they write Geordi like this?
Why? It's so bad. It's really bad. Yeah.
And then we touched on Riker, and I think he is okay at his staff evaluation job. I think we just don't see him at his best because Sam Lavelle reminds him of himself.
Yeah. Let's talk about Sam Lavelle.
The way fandom hated Wesley Crusher for reminding them of themselves.
Right. Sam Lavelle. So I have written here, Sam Lavelle is Will Riker 2.0 and Brad Boimler 1.0. And I stand by that. I think that is very accurate.
I kept trying to picture him with purple hair.
He is fully what Riker was.
Yes.
What Brad will be.
Yes.
And I think that that's kind of sweet.
Mm. I actually think that he is not as much like obviously he fills the Brad Boimler role of being the white guy in the Lower Decks crew. I don't know how similar they are. I think Sam is more socially adept and less weird than Brad.
Yeah, but they're both tryhards.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Also, Sam is just more conventionally attractive than our weedy purple head.
I think that actually it's that he's conventionally attractive. He's tricked you into thinking that he is socially adept because he's not actually in this episode.
So my grandfather was from Canada.
He's not in his interaction on the bridge, his interactions with his friends.
No, you're right.
You know, please give me a promotion with his hands on his head. That's 100% something Brad Boimler would do.
No, you're right.
And also, Brad is more socially adept than you think of, too. Because we always see him in comparison to Mariner.
Yes.
And so obviously he has no chance. But when he's by himself, go watch Those Old Scientists.
Yeah.
And see how he is good at ingratiating himself with people.
No, you're absolutely right.
But Sam Lavelle looks like a Ken doll. Mm-hmm. And so if I finish my photocap, spoilers, that's Ken. And it's going to be all about how Ken he is the entire time.
No, it's true.
Because he also doesn't... Everybody else, we get to know, you know, we sort of know Cito, she gets a whole arc.
Mm.
We sort of know Alyssa, and she gets a whole arc. Not a great one, but it exists. Torek, by virtue of being a Vulcan, we know how that works.
Yes.
Against a human. So we get that. Sam is straight up generic, cute, white dude who's, ops. Ops is a station that's that just is a meaningless, that's whoever doing whatever now, operations is literally, that could be anything. It's just ops, whatever. So we don't know anything about him.
No. Sito goes through a list of the things that she did while she was stationed at ops. And it's she ran scans and looked for a lost puppy.
It's just really funny to me. Ops as a station, Ops as Data's station. People have arguments with people about what Data does on the Enterprise all the time. Because it's he's the operations officer. Well, what does that mean? Well, there's no science officer. So I guess he's the science officer, but it's called the operations officer now. I'm I don't think that's true.
Because this is also Harry Kim's job.
Yeah. It's what is it?
It's a Washakun's job. It's whatever the script requires it to be.
Exactly. So it's fun. Sam Lavelle is an empty, put whatever you want onto him. And what I've decided to put onto him is Will Riker, Brad Wymler clone.
And then at the end, he gets a promotion that he's probably not, probably wasn't the best qualified for.
He gets the promotion because Deanna like needled Riker about it. That's why he got the promotion.
And
Data
also,
was dead and he was there. And so it was like, I guess it's this guy. And you look at everyone in his little friend group and it's like, Ken got the promotion. That sounds right, I guess. That sounds true to life.
I don't want to say he's failing upwards because he does seem good at his job, but it's just, yeah. It's surprising that Sam is as likable as he is, which is also the Will Riker and Brad Boimler story.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I never go out of my way to like these people.
No, they just
And
ooze their way
then they
into my
win me
heart.
over.
God
They
damn
win
it.
me over by being just really sweet and earnest and eager.
Yes! Also, really sweet is Ben, the 10-forward waiter, who I'm going to say is
Aww.
the smartest person on the entire Enterprise. He wanted to see space, he wanted to explore. He didn't go to the academy and give up 4 years of his life and go through torturous psychological testing and the Kobayashi Maru. He learned to mix drinks, and he's a waiter, and he's really good at it.
And he ingratiates himself to everybody,
Yeah.
and he knows everybody. Like that's like okay, yes, he is the smartest because that's like the I want that job. Let's do that.
Oh, yeah.
I would 100% be the person who learns everyone's, everyone's name and
Yep.
favorite drink and friend group, and then figures out how to get them to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Then. I'm sorry that you had to wear that,
Oh, my God.
but you're a smart way to go. I mean, it is kind of fun when you think about like, the Enterprise D, because it is supposed to have these extra 200 people who are just staff,
Yeah.
civilian staff. And I'm like, yes, how do I get to be civilian staff on the Enterprise D?
Yeah.
I have figured out what I want.
I will vacuum the corridors.
I don't care what the job is. It can't be horrible. Most of it'll be automated.
Yeah. You just run the Roomba. Let's talk about Sito and her.
Sad life.
She seems so different from the other Bajoran women that we see. Kira and Ro, they're spiky, they're snarky, they have a chip on their shoulder, they have short tempers. Sito doesn't have any of that. She honestly seems like a bit of a doormat.
She reminds me of Tal Selis.
Yes! And it makes me wonder what sort of background she had. Like, she's the only member of Nova Squadron who didn't have a relative at the inquest. I think she's an orphan. And I suspect she was raised possibly within the Federation, but sort of expected to be grateful for what she had, because that's how she comes across.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely, I wrote it down here, and they say, what did you say to Picard when he was telling you don't belong here? She's like, what could I say? Maybe he's right. Like, she
Yeah.
just accepts it, and she has to get Worf's lesson to realize that she has to stand up for herself, and
Yeah.
that's also part of being an officer. That's also part of getting promoted. It's also part of growing up. That you
It's
have to realize your value and worth and push back.
But also she's grown a lot since the first duty, because with the first duty she was reluctantly going along with everything, and here she is more forthright and more direct with her friends. She does call Sam out. She's very, very gentle about it. But also in, and this is sort of a side effect of Lower Decks coming after Deep Space Nine began, but she is more in tune with Bajoran culture than she was a couple of years ago at the Academy.
Well, so this is why I like your backstory for her being an orphan who was raised somewhere in the Federation. Because she could have been disconnected from her Bajoran background. And I can fully imagine I have to go through the academy again, and everyone hates me.
Yeah.
And seeking out that culture.
Yeah.
And saying, well, you know, I have to go back to my roots and figure out who I really am in order to hold on to this.
That's exactly what I was picturing.
And so, you know, she's grown into it more and has accepted it more because of that traumatic experience. And I love all of the Bajoran women.
Absolutely.
And I love that they're all different and they're the prickly ones and they're the soft ones. And that they're both very Bajoran.
Yes. I think, you know, the Bajoran culture is just incredibly well realized. And in part because unlike with Klingons or Romulans, no one is going, this is how you talk as a Bajoran. They all get to be characters first and Bajorans. Emilia's part of that. And it's interesting that Seeto, she's Starfleet, she seems alienated in some respects from her culture, but she still has that cat ears sideways reaction when she walks into the room and realizes there's a Cardassian there. And
I love her interactions with the Cardassian.
Absolutely.
From the beginning to the scene in the shuttle, it's just, again, it's one of those, like, this is a conversation that needs to be had that they just never have in Deep Space Nine.
No.
Because they're all so angry over there in Deep Space Nine. And I understand that's not the place for it, but thank goodness that this conversation exists, and it's why it's so sad that it ends this way, because it's almost like, you know, you guys are too good for this world. And so we have to stomp you out.
When the Cardassian dissident says of Seeto, I didn't expect her to be so young, I was like, you are also very, very young.
He's so young, yes.
Yeah. I think he's the youngest Cardassian we see until Damar.
Such a baby face.
Yeah.
The kids of the people who've been fighting are the ones who are like, this isn't working. Can we do something else? And that feels like that's very relatable. Even though I'm not that young, but it's still that, can we do something else? Can we try something else?
Yes. I saw a post on Reddit last week where someone was asking if Picard tricked or bullied Seeto into sacrificing herself. And I don't think so for a minute. Like, she herself says she's Bajoran and she knows the risks better than anyone.
Yeah, I feel that she chooses it for herself.
Yeah. And I think that blaming Picard takes away her agency and some of her heroism.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. Picard or Worf, who could both be painted to have been manipulative about it. But I think that, you know, Picard was testing her beforehand and then showed her that, like, this is a thing that we have for you.
Yeah.
But he gives her an out, and there's nothing in me that thinks that he would disagree with her or try to convince her to not go out. He would have been like, okay, cool. You don't have to do it then.
Yeah. I'll send someone else. Put a nose on Riker. Bajoran face. Offensive.
And she's so strong.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Because she is a very soft-spoken, gentle Bajoran, it's easy to overlook that she is easily as strong as Kira or Ro.
Right. And she's making that same sacrifice and she's making that same stand. She's just doing it in a way to try to work towards peace instead of a way to try to blow stuff up.
Yeah.
You know, literally or figuratively. I feel so badly for Worf.
No, same.
Like crying about Worf because he has truly mentored her. He cares about her. He's so worried about her. And then she's just gone.
I just realized that Worf has the same relationship with Seeto Jaxa as he has with Raffi Musica.
I think I said that somewhere. Like, I remember having this conversation before. I was like, you know, Worf is actually a really good mentor when he's allowed to mentor. And he has the person who is you know, that he has to get under their skin and show them that you have to believe in yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you can do it. A little bit of me is like, you know, where did Worf learn that from? Did he learn it because there was no one who ever told him? Like, his parents loved him, but who told Worf that he had to believe in himself?
Yeah.
Or he was a Klingon alone in the Federation, and that's how he learned it.
I mean, I think that could very well be it. Now I am thinking, I think it was Tasha Yar who taught him that. Because he is very, very junior when he comes aboard the Enterprise, and she is his commanding officer. And
gosh, I want a prequel.
No, I know.
Now, I want, like, just one comic book run, maybe. Like, can we just have a cute little 4-issue comic book about Worf's beginnings on the Enterprise under Tasha before she died?
Yeah.
Like, because you're right. And I love that. Because that makes Sito and Rafi Tasha's legacy too.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Also, I just think that the guy who helps women build themselves up is so much cooler than the guy whose girlfriends are always dying.
Yes.
It's the same guy.
It's the same guy, but no, like, Worf, again, Worf in this episode and Worf in all of season 3 of Picard is the best Worf.
Yeah.
No Deep Space Nine Worf, no TNG Worf, just Lower Decks parallels and season 3 of Picard. That's my Worf.
The last thing I wanted to say about Sito is that in the inquiry in The First Duty, she says she didn't see what happened because she was flying blind. She was flying with senses only. And then Worf blindfolds her and makes her fight him on instinct alone. And she's like, I can't do that. That's unreasonable. And I just think this is such a clever... This is what I mean when I say there are parallels there that I don't know were intended. Because that is genius.
Yes. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to say about Sito is that there's this trope, redemption by death, that is the bane of my existence.
Yes.
and I hate it because it is cheap and pointless in the end. You know, you don't get anything out of redemption by death because you can't do anything after you died. And so it doesn't matter if you've become good or not, or forgiven your mistakes, if you're dead. And I love the way that Lower Decks is, and I actually love the sad ending. It is heartbreaking and devastating, and I hate it, but it's also really well done and a beautiful story.
Yeah,
that shows us how damaging war is, how hard it is to build a Federation, how it takes these good people and chews them up and spits them out and they die. And I love that she gets the all ships memorial. You know, that's important and beautiful. And so I love the horrible, sad, terrible ending that I call completely unfair. But because of the way that they bring up her past and they she gets like a compact atonement arc because she's like, I work really, really hard and I've done all these things. And I, like you said, you know, she's more open with her friends and she's more willing to say no. And the fact that she's more willing to say no means that her yes is more meaningful.
Yeah.
And she has that wonderful scene with the Cardassian where they're talking about how things could be better for both of them. So she gets my little arc. But the fact that she dies after literally using the word redeemed in conversation really upsets me because it's too close to that trope.
It's close. That is, but she also says to Picard, you know, she has taken her punishment. She has been punished and moved on. And that in itself is redemptive. Punishment is not continuing, you know. She has earned her place in society. But yeah, I love it and I hate it and I cried and I always cry at the end. And yeah,
me too.
I completely understand why Mariner's life went off the rails after Seto Jaxa died.
I love Lower Decks so much. I also watched those episodes as the part three of the series. I had to watch the Mariner episodes and I cried so much. I just love what they did.
Yes.
And how they continue to make Seto Jaxa important.
Yes.
You know, First Duty is obviously a Wesley Crusher episode, but they like have this this nice little, we took this this character and we made her important in this other episode, and then we decided to make her important to the whole saga.
Yeah,
because that's what Lower Decks is. Lower Decks is putting Star Trek up on a pedestal.
She goes from being a Lower Decker in the First Duty as a supporting character to the protagonist of Lower Decks to the motivation for the protagonist in Lower Decks, the series.
It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
Now Mariner can grow too.
Yes.
She needs to meet Worf.
Oh my god.
Can we please have Worf and Mariner, please?
It's time for my fortnightly letter.
Dear Michael McMahon. Dear Michael McMahon, we know you read our letters. We've sent you so many.
Okay, I have one more comment about Lower Decks, and it is not a beautiful comment. Why is Worf's contouring so bad?
Yeah. So I read that comment before I watched it, and I was just like, oh my gosh.
No, no. Once you notice...
it has to be a high-definition problem.
Oh, absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
It's not a purpose. That's supposed to be that way.
No. Also, this was like 1992, and contouring was something almost exclusively done by, like, Hollywood makeup artists. But I just want to, like, reach in with a damp sponge and blend his cheekbone a little.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
Oh my goodness.
It's not as bad. I'm into season 6 of Voyager in my rewatch, and you can actually see the lace front on B'Elanna's wigs sometimes. High definition television, even for a show that hasn't been remastered for it, is just not kind.
It's not kind.
But oh my gosh. Worf, please watch a makeup tutorial.
And you should also draw that.
Yes, ma'am.
Just, you know, he's got his little YouTube.
Yes. Also, Worf, amazing. Worf as makeup TikTok influencer.
Hi, exactly.
Welcome back to my channel.
He would have so many followers.
It would all be like Batleth tips and contouring. And also, I noticed for the first time, and this has probably been the case for like a million years, but the tips of his mustache are like curled.
Well, remember, you know, the mid seasons where he has like
the bob. Little... Yeah.
He does hair.
Fashion icon Worf.
Fashion icon Worf. He doesn't always make it, but he always cares.
Yeah, he makes the effort. Thank you for listening to Antimatter Pod. You can find our show notes at antimatterpod.com. Oh my gosh, fashion icon Worf is why he and Deanna get on so well.
Yes!
Including links to our social media, credits for our theme music, and transcripts of our episodes. You can find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, and Blue Sky, all at Antimatter Pod, and on Mastodon at antimatterpod@10forward.social. If you like us, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you consume your podcasts. The more reviews, the easier it is for new listeners to find us. Or tell a friend. Join us in 2 weeks when we will be discussing Star Trek Voyager, Season 5, Episode 23, 1159, and ask the big questions like, where was Henry Janeway on 6 January 2021?